Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Thursday, July 30th, welcome, 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 friends, on Into the Program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt. Last show in July, Cherry.
Mm-hmm.
August is
coming. That was fast. Oh, my gosh.
Thank you for saying that. I was just trying to set you
up.
It flew by. Thank you. Thank you for picking up what I'm putting down. Today on the show, we are talking about the resurgence or the reported resurgence of what people call granny hobbies. These are like analog hobbies mm-hmm. that are generally associated with older people. Knitting, crochet, bird watching, for mm-hmm. example. There has apparently been a resurgence of these hobbies among younger people. This was brought to my attention by our lovely producer, Hazel Bryan, who noticed this trend out there, and there's actually been quite a bit of reporting about it.
Yeah, it's a thing.
It's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to talk about why it's a thing today on the show, and we're going to talk to some people, some younger people who are into these types of hobbies, and of course, we would really love to hear from you, our lovely listeners, because this feels like a good audience participation show.
I definitely so. I want to hear people's granny hobbies. They're analog hobbies.
Yeah, so are you into any offline analog granny hobbies? What are they? What do they do for you?
Mm-hmm.
How do they fill your cup?
Oh, I like that.
Maybe a cup that you made on a potter's wheel. Because that's kind of a granny hobby, right?
Yeah, that is a granny hobby.
In fact, I have a mug right here I'm drinking out of right now.
Did you make that?
Did I make it?
Somebody made it.
Yeah, my sister made it.
Oh,
she's really talented at pottery.
Touching the cup.
People have actually written to me
about the cup. It's a beautiful cup.
It's an amazing. So I guess
one of a kind.
I don't know if pottery is a granny hobby. I think it would qualify, but maybe if it is, my sister is in this group because she's younger and she does. Anyways, whatever. 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. YouTube, Facebook. Drop a comment in the live chat. We would love to hear about your analog offline hobbies.
Yeah, I look forward to it. I took up gardening a few years ago.
Yes.
So apparently that's on the list of granny hobbies. Go figure. I mean,
you're a granny hobbyist.
I guess I'm a granny. I didn't know. So email studio2@whyy.org. The call is 888-477-9499 if you want to give us a ring. And it's Thursday, which means it's DJ of the day.
Indeed it is. So we always end the week with a show with a song picked by one of you about mm-hmm. that show's topic. So we just laid out what the topic is today. So send in your nominations to EP Kevin, studio2@whyy.org, a song that you believe captures the essence of the topic today. Get it in by 12:30, and one of you will be our DJ of the day. Now to a trio of local news stories. Cherry, we'll start with you. A very serious story out of Montgomery County.
Bit of a scandal at Cheltenham High School. Four football coaches and six players have been charged in connection to an assault on another player. According to Montgomery County prosecutors, a 15-year-old player was violently attacked in the school's locker room last year, first in August and then again in September. Multiple members of the Cheltenham High School football team participated in this assault, with someone or one stomping on the sophomore's chest and groin while wearing cleats. The teen was also assaulted with a broomstick. The August incident was caught on video, and it shows players laughing, yelling, and chanting. And the September assault was apparently witnessed by 20 students. Authorities say when the assaults were reported to the team coaches by the victim, those coaches tried to cover it up by encouraging the teen victim not to tell his parents. Prosecutors say the coaches wanted the incidents handled and kept quiet, and feared that if it got out, they would cancel the whole season. Eventually, the teen told his mom, and it all came out. The hazing incident did in fact lead to the school district canceling last year's season in October. And in May, they announced that this upcoming season would also be canceled as well. Now, the Montgomery County District Attorney has charged the head coach, two assistant coaches, and a volunteer coach with endangering the welfare of a child and conspiracy. None of the coaches still work for that school district. Four players are also being charged with aggravated assault and other crimes. Two are being charged as adults because they're over 18, and two are being charged as juveniles. And now there is this Title IX investigation going on, Avi. There's an outside investigator. He said that the district failed to prioritize student safety and cultivated a toxic and negative culture. And I have to mention that this teen victim who was attacked. He has since left the school. He's doing virtual school. And his mom says he is continuing to struggle after these incidents. And authorities, they say that Cheltenham School District has a lot of work to do to regain the trust of students, parents, and the community.
Yeah, just jaw-dropping details. There had been a lot of mystery around this for a long time, and there still is, right? Because all this still has to be proven. These are all allegations at this point. But why had two football seasons been canceled? And there's so many alarming details in here, including how was there a culture, allegedly, within this school's football team such that multiple adults seemed, their first instinct seemed to be
keep it quiet.
Not have this reported.
Yeah.
That's such a searing question.
Yeah. And this broomstick incident, it's very troubling that this would happen. And the young man's, the mom, the mother of the victim said that her son didn't even want to tell her about what was happening and took days for her to find out. So a lot happening here. And we'll continue to follow the story.
Yeah. Story number two, stay in Montgomery County now. Officials in King of Prussia are trying to build a $200 million entertainment complex with hopes of attracting pro baseball and soccer teams to the area. This is an interesting story in the Philadelphia Business Journal. They report that Upper Marion Township is looking at a 16-acre site near Valley Forge Casino to build potentially a 7,500-seat baseball stadium, which then raises the question, is KLP trying to land a minor league baseball team? Because that's about the size of stadium you would build for that. They also want to build a soccer stadium, raising the question, is KLP trying to land a women's soccer team for the region? Because there's long been talk of Philly adding a women's pro soccer team. Now, we should say this is all a long way off. Upper Marion officials are still seeking a state grant to kickstart the planning process. They say they need that money to get the ball rolling here. So all very speculative. But it's interesting that KLP, this would be a big step for that area, establishing itself almost as like a mini metropolitan area in the Philadelphia satellite, not sort of taking a step beyond suburb in a sense.
I gotta say, KLP is popping.
It truly is.
Those folks over there in leadership positions, they're thinking big. And they have all sorts of jobs there. I was looking online not too long ago. So many job opportunities in that King of Prussia area where you don't even have to leave the area. You can live there. You can work there. You don't even have to come to Philadelphia. And they're really sort of setting themselves up, as you said, as this little, outskirt bubble and their own little area. You can go out there and hang out all day. There's all sorts of things in that King of Prussia area that it's a huge draw.
Right. So it's not just the mall, right? It's a huge employment center.
It is.
It's at a huge population boom out there.
And I think great
the
housing,
is,
too.
Is how far does it go? And it's an interesting contrast, right? Because if you look back to prior generations and you looked at satellite cities in the Philadelphia era, you thought of places like Camden and Chester. Those places had really invested in heavy industry, industrial type jobs. KOP really invested in sort of the next generation of jobs, the white collar jobs, the office parks.
Yeah.
And that helped grow that area. And now it'll be interesting to see, how far they can expand and what that does for traffic and commutes and everything. Right. But the idea of there being a minor league baseball team in KOP is kind of mind blowing.
Yeah. And it makes it a cool place to live.
I guess.
Maybe. We'll see.
You think KLP is cool?
Could be cool.
I'm not saying it's not
it
cool.
Could
I'm
be
just,
cool.
I don't know.
And that kind of leads us to the third story.
Another sports story here.
Yeah. LeBron James mania continues after the recent announcement that the King will play for the 76ers. But some fans have gotten big mad at the idea that LeBron James may live in New York and commute to Philly. We don't know for sure. I'm not mad. But some
live
fans
where you
have.
Want, LeBron.
And but despite rumors, there's growing speculation over where in the area King James could live.
Where could he live? I don't know.
Crossing Broad, they allegedly spoke to a real estate source, and I use that term very loosely, and they put together a funny list of 10 places in the Philly area that Bron is considering. And this list had me chuckling.
It's satire, to be clear.
It's a joke. Top three on the list, Lansdale in Monco near the Hatfield Slaughterhouse because he, quote, loves the smell of napalm in the morning. There's that. Fishtown near the I-95 ramp. And whatever you call that neighborhood behind the Aramingo Wawa. That's my hood adjacent, right?
Yep.
And that would be Port Richmond, maybe. I don't know what that is. No, but it also got me thinking, where do you think, Avi, LeBron would or could live in Philly, in the area?
I mean, I don't want to brag, but I have a guest room.
Okay, you can come stay with you.
LeBron.
Yeah.
Come live with me in South Philly. Very convenient to the stadium. I won't charge you any rent.
Mm-mm.
No one would ever suspect that you live there, so you have privacy, because no one would even believe that you would live in my guest room in South Philadelphia. And you've always been a trailblazer, LeBron.
I think you would be the first NBA legend
to live in my guest room.
And you know what? I'll stump for South Philly, because they got good tacos down there.
They got good tacos down there, LeBron.
So come through.
Plus, I think I'm a pretty good cook. Me and my wife.
And you know, he got cups.
We have a garden.
Handmade.
We have a patio garden. I have handmade cups. I don't know. I think I kind of just sold myself on this. LeBron, give me a call. The guest room's yours. And that settles it. We'll be right back on Studio 2. And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Why are retro pastimes like scrapbooking, birding, and knitting having a moment? A whole new cohort seems to be loving things usually associated with an older generation. So today on the show, we're looking at what's behind the boom in binoculars and crafting and what to make of it.
Our first guest this hour just published a story all about this. Kate Brennan is a freelance journalist and author of a recent New York Times piece called The Comforting Resurgence of Grandma Hobbies. Kate, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, great to have you. And of course, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. A question of the day, are you into any offline analog granny hobbies? What are they and what do they do for you? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, you can bring a comment in the live chat. You want to start with a call?
Sure, Avi? Let's do it.
Yeah, let's bring in Sherry in Hamilton, New Jersey. Sherry, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Thanks so much for having me. So every Sunday, I take a few hours to handwrite letters to my friends and family, and I also use a wax seal to seal my envelopes.
I would love to get one of those letters.
That seems
no
really
pressure,
cool.
No pressure, Sherry. No pressure.
That's cool with the wax seal stamp on the back. I love it. Thank you. That's Sherry in Hamilton, New Jersey. I think that's an analog hobby. That's
very
really cool.
Analog.
Very analog.
Definitionally analog.
Yeah.
Let me read this comment from Lisa in Berks County, mm-hmm. who says, our daughter just turned 25, Gen Zer.
Uh-huh.
One of her hobbies started while she was still in high school, getting together with a friend or two to do paint by numbers
wow.
on small boards. A number of them are still in her room. Her current hobbies include baking bread, crochet, mm-hmm. embroidery, jigsaw puzzles, houseplants, caring for fish, and
very
board
analog.
Games. Lisa says, when I was her age, I'd done none of those things, except maybe the board games. So Lisa's daughter is like the final boss of granny hobbyists there. She's
love
doing it,
it
all. Let's bring in Kate Brennan here, who wrote this piece for the New York Times. So we're meeting more people out there like Lisa's daughter. We're more Gen Zers are into these types of hobbies. How did you catch on to this trend, Kate?
Sure. So I first noticed it in my own life, my own circle of friends. I'm actually not inherently crafty. I never had a grandma hobby of my own, but it seemed like all of the people in my orbit had that. My friends have been needlepointing, knitting, quilting, whittling, which I thought was hilarious. And then on two separate occasions, two different friends have canceled plans with me because they were going bird watching.
Wow.
Don't take it personal.
And you were like, what?
Yeah. The first time I thought it was fake. And then afterwards, I'm like, okay, something is going on in my generation and somebody needs to talk about this. And I knew that grandma hobbies were taking off on the internet because I saw Work in Progress Wednesday, where people go on TikTok and Instagram and they share their needlepoint projects and the progress that they're making. And so I knew that I wanted to write about it. And then I learned about folk schools, which for those who don't know, they're community-based schools. They originated in Denmark in the 1800s and then came to the U.S. And they teach these practical hands-on skills like woodworking, blacksmithing, quilting, gardening, anything you can think of. And after speaking to the founder, I learned that younger people were also gravitating towards these folk schools. And so I felt like that would be the lens that I would want to tell this story through.
And so you went to this school. What did you learn about why folks are sort of picking up these hobbies that are very tactile, hands-on?
So a lot of the students were around my age. I'm 26, but it was a mix. We also had a 70-year-old. It was a big group of people. So everybody had different reasons for coming there. And I think the younger people, the people my age, grandma hobbies, you know, obviously they're not new, but I think they are resonating with us in a very specific way because we are among the first to grow up with smartphones, social media, and just this constant digital stimulation. And at the same time, rates of loneliness, anxiety, and burnout are much higher than they were a few decades ago. So I think also for many of us, these traditions aren't being passed down through families in the same way that they once were. And so a lot of students that I spoke to were trying to get away from their phones, get away from technology, AI, everything that is kind of taking over their worlds right now, but also just trying to maybe reconnect with grandparents who have passed and reconnect to that slower way of life that everybody's looking for.
We're asking you this hour if you have any offline analog granny hobbies. What are they? What do they do for you? Mm-hmm. Our number is 888-477-9499. Our email is studio2@whyy.org. Let's bring in another caller here. Jonathan in Flowertown is on line three. Jonathan, do you have a quote unquote granny hobby to share with us?
Hi. So I was explaining, my friend recently got the game Wingspan, which I don't know if you know about it, but it's all about birds.
Okay.
And she's really into birds, but she got me into this game, and now I am into birds as well. So I just think that all these games coming out of different varieties.
It's a board game. It's a physical game you play.
It is. It also has a digital version, but I played the physical game.
Yeah.
And you play. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I was asking, I want you to finish your sentence, but also tell us, what is it about birds that sort of got you hooked?
The game is really, really well designed. If you have a chance, look into it. But there's also expansion packs that you can go into, and that's a whole different story. But what I was going to say is I just think the type of games that you play, granted, as a kid or now, can really expand, quote-unquote, these grandma hobbies.
Yeah. Thanks, Jonathan and Flowertown, for that call. Lots of folks writing in with their granny hobbies. Jess from East Passyunk says, so much of what pulls individuals to social media is this assurance of endless good feelings all the time, instant gratitude. What I love about noni hobbies like gardening and painting is that there's a jump-off point of absolute beginner, many failures, frustration, some improv, some problem-solving, and then a light, a sense of accomplishment when you begin to acquire the skills and begin to see progress in real time. What do you think, Kate Brennan, about that explanation, the idea that there's so much instant gratification on social media that people are seeking delayed gratification in younger generations?
That was definitely a big part of what I saw during my weekend at the folk school and even my own experience. I had never done hobbies like that before. And it was really at first a little hard to get used to because I wasn't used to having to learn all these things like the sewing machine. And it was frustrating at first. But then after a while, your mind kind of quiets in a way that you're not used to when you are surrounded by your phone and computers all the time. You get this sense of inner peace and gratification that you really don't get from anything else because you're spending a lot of time on this craft. You're spending time with yourself and your own thoughts, and it becomes very therapeutic. And that's what a lot of students told me as well.
Yeah, it's like therapy. It's like meditation in a lot of ways. I love that. Kate, let's bring in another caller. We have Dave from Highbridge, New Jersey on the line. Dave, you're on Studio 2. You have a grandpa hobby.
Yeah, I guess you could call it a grandpa hobby. I'm not a grandpa. I could be a grandpa, but I'm not. I build plastic bottle airplanes.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
What do you love about it, Dave?
Well, there's a bunch of things, like some of what, you know, you're talking about with grandma hobbies. You know, it's it's a craft for sure. I mean, it's a very, it's almost like precision craft where, you know, there's a whole process of, you know, the order of doing things and trying to get something perfect. But one aspect of it is historical research. Mm. So, like, I won't build a model of a plane unless I can, you know, research it and, like, I know the history of the development of that plane. And then, like, where was it? Like, say right. It was in Europe in World War II, and what squadron was it? And, you know, what was their history? And
yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of background, you know, research to, you know, where you learn a lot about history and engineering and color. Anyway, so
good for the thank mind, you. Good for the hands. It works.
I
works
love
on
that.
Everything
that's
there.
Dave from High Bridge, New Jersey, and that is my follow up question because I know we're gonna have to let you go soon, Kate. But you know, I just wondered if it forces you to be present because you know, a lot of times you're doing things, your mind is someplace else. You're in a place. You're at dinner. You're on your phone. Your mind someplace else. Did you hear that from anybody about just doing these hobbies force you to be 100% present and in the moment?
Oh, absolutely. Actually, one of the people that I spoke to for the story was a Danish folk school instructor and a craft psychologist. And she talked about this concept of meaningful self-forgetfulness, where this part of your brain called the default mode network, it's kind of responsible for all of your overthinking and just your mind racing all the time. That kind of shuts down once you get into the zone. Some people call it flow state, I guess, where you're really just locked into your craft. All the background noise quiets down and you really get this sense of peace and you don't have that overthinking that you would normally have.
Mm. Well, we have to let Kate Brennan go, but thank you so much, Kate, for your time today on Studio 2. Kate is a freelance journalist who covered granny hobbies in a recent article for the New York Times. Kate, thanks again for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yes.
And joining us in the studio now are two local hobbyists. First, let me welcome Jason Hall, founder of In Color Birding, a bird watching club aimed at connecting communities of color to nature. Jason, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Also with us is Arden Benner, an elder statesman with the popular knitting group, Philadelphia Drunken Knitwits. Thanks for being here, Arden. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you both.
All right. So, Arden, what are the Drunken Knitwits? What do they do? How'd you get into this?
Yes.
So the Drunken Knitwits are a club of knitters and crocheters across Philadelphia and a little bit beyond. We meet every week on Wednesdays at a different bar in the city, and we work on our projects together. So we all have our individual yarn work that we're doing, knit, crochet, whatever you please, but we're doing them together in a shared space over a few drinks, often over a meal. Ooh. We're sharing in community, but we're also working on something that we find important to ourselves.
So what drew you, Arden, to this group?
This group is one of the very first things I found when I moved to Philly almost 4 years ago. I was here. I knew how to crochet. I know I loved it. And I Googled clubs near me.
Yeah, there you go.
And the Philadelphia Drunken Knitwits showed up. I was terrified, as I think anyone would be, to walk into a room of people they do not know in a city they just entered all by themselves. But I met some of the most wonderful, welcoming people ever, and they have been a major part of my community the last few years.
Are these younger people or older people? What's the demographics? Because I think a lot of people would be surprised. You're a younger person. You're super into this hobby. They might be, you know, just a little surprised by that. Is that typical, though?
Yeah, I think the cliche of a knitting circle is a group of older women who maybe retired hanging out together. We're all, I would say, much younger, under 50, I would say. Mm-hmm. Various ages, various stages in life, mm-hmm. which I think is some of the most exciting thing about this. Some of us are in school. Some of us are mothers. Some of us are rushing there after work at high speed. But we all find this moment of joy and community here together.
Yeah, and I want to bring you into the conversation, Jason. Mm-hmm. You're founder of In Color Birding.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to start this group?
Well, after COVID and some of the things that happened in the summer of 2020, I experienced something called Black Birders Week that another group had put on across the country, a group called Black AF and STEM. And I realized I've been a birder since 2001, and I realized there weren't a lot of opportunities for black and brown communities in Philly to get out into nature and experience it. So I founded In Color Birding with another five beautiful souls around the city. And we've since been doing events essentially every weekend in the spring and fall.
So tell me, what is it about bird watching, you know, or birding, right? Because mm-hmm. I'm assuming you do more than just watch. Mm-hmm. But tell me, what is it about it that that kind of sucked you in?
Well, what sucked me in as a senior in high school was just the connection to nature, and almost like somebody took the blinders off. I had walked through this park behind Upper Darby High School every day to get to school. And then my senior year, I have a teacher that sits me out there for 90 minutes and says, sketch every bird you see. Mm. And I was like, wait a minute. It's like 20 different species of birds. And I've been walking here. I've never seen these. I didn't even know they were here. And that is exactly what we give to people when they come out with us. They've been going to Fairmount Park their whole life, but they've never seen the bald eagles fly over to get down to the river. They've never seen the Baltimore Orioles singing in the trees or building nests every spring. And so that's what we want to bring them, is this different and rewarding aspect to the communities they already live in. Mm.
Let me bring in another caller, because we've been asking about your hobbies and your interests, especially analog offline hobbies and interests. Stella from Mount Airy is online for. Hey, Stella, you're on Studio 2. What's your perspective?
Hey, so I am the owner of Needles and Bolts in Mount Airy. It's a quilt shop. We teach people how to sew, whether it's on a machine or hand sewing. And we've seen a huge resurgence of folks getting interested in using a machine that's maybe been tucked in their closet for a little while, or trying to be more mindful about their hobbies because they're endlessly scrolling on their phones, or they're stuck on Slack at work and they want to disconnect a little bit from the technology.
Yeah, that's a great perspective from Stella in Mount Airy, who's seen clients coming into the shop seeking exactly what we've been laying out this hour. Let's bring in another caller. This is from Upper Darby, because you just mentioned Upper Darby, Jason. This is David from Upper Darby. David, do you have a granny hobby, a grandpa hobby to share with us?
I do, inherited from my grandmother. I can spend hours on any given day prepping and cooking.
Yeah, for sure.
My siblings love it. I make in quantity. I freeze, and I have it on hand. Casserole, soups, sides, and I thoroughly enjoy it, and I eat well.
David, what's the best dish you make?
Oh, gosh. I've been getting into chili. It's a simple one, but chili rellenos.
Oh, I love chili rellenos.
Look, we got the foodie over here. Actually.
But, I want a letter from the first caller, and I want some chili rellenos.
Avi got very excited when you said that, David.
You know what? Avi and Cheryl, you might get it.
All right.
I love
it.
Thank you so much. I want to read a couple comments. Maisha on Facebook says, sewing, carpentry, cooking, and baking. Really, I love all multimedia handcrafts. I set a goal of learning a new one each year. It's therapeutic and rewarding. Sharon on Facebook says, I took crocheting back up last year. The feel of yarn is very calming. And Jen says, I mosaic, collage, junk journal, and tie-dye. I love tie-dye. And also, I do 1,000-piece puzzles. I wonder, there's a thread.
Patience of a saint, Jen.
I know. I know, that's right. And so I hear there's a thread between sort of what both of you do. And so, Arden, I wonder, like, does the feeling of yarn do something for you? You know, like, even crocheting and knitting, does that bring you some sort of peace, connection, in addition to the community that you've sort of found through the Knitwits?
Yeah, I mean, with fiber crafts, it's finding a rhythm. You get to the point where you might start saying knit, purl, or you're counting your crochet as you go. And then all of a sudden you realize it's been a while since you've had a coherent thought and you were just at peace with the fiber in your hand. And that is a slippery slope because you can forget what row you're on, but it's worth it because you are having a mindful moment with yourself. I'm not worried about what's going on Instagram or Twitter. I'm at peace where I am in that moment.
Yeah.
And I feel like maybe a theme we're circling around here is the idea that all of us, this the collective us, have just sort of misjudged what makes younger people happy. Because you might ask, let's say an older person, they say the young generation, head's always in the phone. That's where their attention is. That's where their lives are centered. Talking about social media. Is that true, but not as true as we think, Jason, mm-hmm. when you talk to other young people? Is it not true at all? Like, as we have this conversation, I want you to reflect on what, how young people relate to technology.
Yeah, so we have to give young people grace because they've grown up in this. This is the way their world communicates, and we're not going back, you know? So we have to give them grace as they navigate that. And what we're trying to do is bring them back to some of these other things that maybe because of their circumstance, all the technology that's stuffed in their face after 3 or 4 years old, hey, there's birds outside.
Yeah.
There's a park. There's
and people are young people are receptive to that. To that
they
call.
Are. They are because they find not only community out there with each other. Right? Where, trust me, the younger birders are way cooler than I am.
Yeah. Wait, you're pretty young,
but they,
Jason.
Yeah, but...
And you're
but,
pretty cool. You're wearing a cool hat, I have to say.
That thank hat you. Is thank amazing, you.
I appreciate
by the way.
It. Mm-hmm. But they also then find connection with other generations where we're finding now sometimes on our bird outings, we have people that are retirees in their 60s and 12-year-olds mm-hmm. walking together, having a conversation about the Baltimore Oriole or the Red Cardinal they just saw or the kids showing... someone else, something they sketched last week, a bird they saw in their backyard. And so they don't know it, but they're connecting with a more natural part of themselves that we've always had since we walked off the Serengeti millions of years ago.
Mm. And I follow up, Jason, and I'd love to hear from you too, Arden. How did this change you? Like finding this hobby, finding this community, how did it shift your perspective about life and just about yourself?
Well, for me, it's been a journey. Initially, it started with just connection to nature and being aware of my place in this ecosystem, right? And then socially, as we got through some of the things that were happening in this country around race relations, community relations, birding has actually brought me to a place where I can more positively impact those communities and those conversations through birding. So the birds bring us all out there and people from different backgrounds, and we make connections, we make strides, we have conversations about not just birds, you know, about serious stuff. And that is really how it's really changed my life. And then the last piece would just be my mental health. When I have a long day, my wife says, go outside, just like my mom used to tell me when I was 5. And I go outside and I go look at birds, and it literally lowers my cortisol and my stress level. So.
Wow. And the same question for you. Did it sort of shift you finding this community of nitwits and just having, you know, something that you can sort of pearl? What did you say?
Knit pearl.
Did it sort of impact you? How did it shift your life and your perspective?
Yeah. Knitting for me started solitary, just something I do on the train, at a bar, hanging out by myself at home just so that I didn't have my phone in my hand. So when I found the Drunken Nitwits and my friends and community there, and I realized I can do this with other people, that was a major game changer, because now not only was I doing something that brings my brain peace, I was doing something that fed my soul. I was communicating and making a community with the people that I loved here in Philly, and now they are some of my greatest friends, and we collaborate and we have a great time. Mm.
Let me bring in, read some more comments and bring in another caller. Speaking, you said Orioles, right? This is a Baltimore Orioles related hobby. Adam on Facebook says, I manually score baseball games, Phillies and Cubs, every single game. Bill says, the ultimate granny hobby is reading lengthy, complex literature. It's also one that's going away at an alarming rate, even among grannies. That's Bill's perspective. Let's bring in Abby from Wynwood on the line. Hey, Abby, you're on Studio 2. Do you have a granny hobby you want to share with us?
I do. I enjoy knitting and all sorts of stuff. Sewing I've been doing since I was about 10 or 11. And when I was a kid, this was a source of deep shame. I didn't share this with anyone. I didn't tell people that I did this. I didn't wear things that I made because I feel like there was a stigma associated with something that looked homemade. And that was for like the weird 4-H kids. And I feel like now if I wear something that I've made, I am looking forward to people saying, oh my gosh, did you make that? It's like, I did. I can make the thing. I can make the thing tailored to my body. I can make something that's never been seen before. And it gives me this tremendous source of pride as well as like all the benefits of sustainability.
Mm. I love that.
Growth. Thank you so much.
Oh my goodness.
We say in the Nitwits that anyone can go out and buy a sweater today, but it's different when you put months of blood, sweat, and tears into a garment that someone
you
in your family
appreciating will keep. That. You start appreciating that the time, the attention, mm-hmm. the detail of creating something from your hand. I just love that.
As we get ready to wrap up this segment, because Abby brought up this idea that she felt some shame around these hobbies mm-hmm. when she was younger, mm-hmm. what's your message, both of you, to someone who wants to get started, wants to find a real world hobby, something that makes them feel centered? How would you advise them to start going about that quest? And I'll start with you, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing is to try and find the community. And this is where technology actually helps.
Yes.
Right? And so you're already on social media. So if you don't have a bird club near you, look around and see who's on social media. Connect with people. Follow people. See what they're doing. I've met a lot of people in my years over the country and then known them for 3 years and then met them for the first time in person last summer.
Yeah.
And they're part of my community. So I'd say find your community first and use the technology available to do so. And then give yourself some grace and be brave and jump in.
Absolutely. Arden, what's your advice for someone who's looking for a hobby like this?
Be brave, 100%. I think no matter what age you are, walking into a room where you don't know anyone can be terrifying. Mm. But all of those strangers are just friends you haven't made yet. They are waiting for you, and every person in that group makes it stronger.
Your people are out there.
Yes, find your tribe. Your people. Yes.
Let me thank Arden Benner, senior member, we're saying that sort of tongue-in-cheek, of the Knitting Club, the Philadelphia Drunken Nitwits.
So Arden, young. He's like, I'm so young.
Arden, thank you so much for your time today on Studio 2.
Thank you.
And thank you, Jason Hall, founder of the birdwatching group In Color Birding. Jason, appreciate the time.
You got it.
And let's read a couple more comments. Lots of people writing
in. I know. I love
it. Lauren on Facebook says, it's all about crochet. It gives me something to work and focus on that isn't work. Emily says, my 16-year-old is constantly doing fiber arts, crochet, knitting, weaving, embroidery. She recently taught me how to crochet.
I love it.
So the generational continuum is going the other way there. Thank you for that comment, Emily. On the other side of this break, we're going to talk more about what these hobbies like do for us neurologically. Keep sending your granny hobbies into Studio 2 at whyy.org. And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. This hour, we're talking all things analog and why hobbies like sewing, knitting, scrapbooking, and bird watching are taking flight with Gen Z.
We're turning now to the science of how these pastimes impact our health and our well-being. Joining us is Susan Magsalmon, the founder and executive director of the International Arts and Mind Lab at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine and co-author of the New York Times bestselling book, Your Brain on Art. Susan, thanks for joining us on Studio 2.
Thanks for having me. I really love the conversation.
Yay. Yes,
and we're happy to have you be part of it.
Yes. And of course, listeners, we'd love to hear from you this hour. Are you into any offline analog granny hobbies? What are they? And what do they do for you? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, you can keep those comments coming in the live chat. Matt says, my granny hobby is flower gardening. It's also my lazy project. I grew up cutting my parents' lawn. Now, forget it. On my own property, I've replaced all but a small backyard patch with perennial flowers.
Get
I love that.
Grass,
and so, you know, Susan, wanted to jump right in and just sort of talk about what is actually happening in our brain. I mean, you heard from our two guests, Jason and Arden, about, you know, how it brings peace and relaxation. But, you know, what is happening in our brain when we're neurologically, when we're knitting, gardening, or quilting, or doing something tactile?
Yeah, I love this. I love that the word peace came up so much too. Mm-hmm. Quiet. Peace, calm. The nitwit conversation was so interesting because I think about our hands and just at a very physiological level, each one of our fingertips have over 1,000 receptors that bring the world in through our touch, which goes through our thalamus and something called the somatosensory cortex that releases different neurotransmitters and hormones. And so touch often activates something called oxytocin, which is sometimes called the love hormone, but it's about comfort and feeling connected to yourself or to others. And so even just the act of using your fingers are eliciting these receptors. And the contrast to the digital world and the way that we can use our hands with these different textures, whether it's clay or dirt or yarn or fabric. I think there's something really essential about what it means to be human and what it means to use our hands. And that I think, you know, that's not the only sort of thing at play when we think about some of the neurophysiological systems. But just a couple things to address sort of what's happening in our brains and our bodies when we're doing this. One is focus and attention. Mm-hmm. And that's really important. These repetitive tasks that we're doing help us to move into that deep concentration or flow state. Another is this hand-brain connection. Interestingly, and I think this is because of the sensorial nature of these activities really support memory and learning. And that's extraordinary, right? You can recall information better when you're actively creating and following patterns and remembering steps and learning new techniques. And it doesn't just transfer. Think about it more like exercise, where you're building capacity. And then a number of the folks that I listened to talked about reducing stress, super critical, but also boosting creative expression and creative problem solving. Again, that becomes generative, as well as things like improving our mood and our emotional well-being. And then there's some great work out now talking about the fact that these kinds of stimulating activities help us with our cognition and actually slow down the aging process. And, you know, aging isn't just about years, it's also about wear and tear. And so I think we're coming back to this because in some ways we forgot it.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to read in a few more comments because a lot of folks are writing in with their hobbies. Sarah says, during the pandemic, I broke my foot, so I was double stuck inside. I started learning how to embroider during my downtime. I used some patterns and also made some very crude freehand pieces. I've been using that for birthdays, Mother's Day, and holiday gifts ever since. Lou on Facebook says, don't forget vinyl records. The kids keep looting my collection. Online one, we have Pam and Cherry Hill. Hey, Pam, do you have a hobby to share with us?
I do, and I do indeed. Hey, what I do is I try out different recipes for my Instant Pot.
Oh, right.
And I didn't buy it for that purpose to begin with. I bought it because my son had a project for his Spanish class. He had to make like a Costa Rican dinner. And the recipe he picked out, it happened to be for Instant Pot, which I didn't have. So I bought one. So, you know, he aced the thing, and then I've got this Instant Pot. So ever since, I've been experimenting with, you know, different recipes, and I even mostly chicken recipes, but I make brisket in it now.
Oh, okay.
And all right.
Yeah, I use my mother's recipe, and she's 90. She's tried it. She really likes it. And
that's the ultimate approval.
Right. And it's, you know, and I, so my husband and son are my guinea pigs, and some recipes work out better than others, but you know, it's all a process. And when you're doing something that is complex like this, it's like you're not online. You know what I mean? And I know it's not like as tactile as some of the others, but still, you're creating something, and then you get
absolutely.
To eat it.
And you have to focus.
Well, that's the part I like too, the eating at the end. Thank you, Pam.
I love that.
And Cherry Hill. We talked a lot, Susan, about the benefits of just using your hands. What about something that a couple of our commenters brought up earlier, delayed gratification, like following a process to get to an outcome? Is there any evidence that that's especially rewarding for us or helps us mentally?
So there's some great, you may remember the marshmallow experiment that was done. That's about delayed gratification, right? And so if you can delay gratification, you're going to have greater success. And I think one of the folks were talking about taking the time to knit a sweater, but feeling so much satisfaction from doing that. And I think that is kind of a version of that that's really important. And I do think that we're expanding our capacity to be able to wait for the success to delay the dopamine hit that's so rapid in screen time. And so there's something really important about that as just a lifelong skill. It ties into social and self-regulation also, and that's kind of a prefrontal thing in our brains, is how do we, you know, think about order and process and expanding the time. And when you're enjoying something, you're going to do it longer too. That's the other thing. And so there's a reward that happens in that delayed gratification, as opposed to feeling like I'm waiting. And so I think there's a real balance there. And I think we need it. Someone also mentioned, I think it was Kate mentioned, the default mode network. And the default mode network is an interesting thing. It's the part of the brain that comes online when you mind wander and daydream. And some of these activities that we're talking about, like gardening or even bird watching or hiking in nature, and you know, nature is our true nature. And so when we go into nature, automatically, if we feel safe in that space, go back to homeostasis. Our blood pressure normalizes, our heart rate normalizes, because it's what we come from. Mm-hmm. So there's something really great about being able to, you know, move into these spaces where you can actually go inside your head and not ruminate, but know what you like, what you don't like, what's important to you, what's beautiful to you. Those are all the things that the default mode network allows you to do.
And I worry with social media that we're like, sometimes I just feel like my internal like gratification cycle, my internal rhythm is just getting too sped up. And then when I try to do something else, it's used to that speed and kind of wants to tug me back in that direction. Can these things over time just help slow down that mechanism inside us?
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, at its core, you know, this dopamine hit, constant dopamine hit, is a form of addictive behavior, right? Mm-hmm. And there's been some legal cases about that related to social media for youth in particular. And so it takes a while to literally transfer to other activities that don't have that immediate hit.
Right.
So, you know, so you need to allow for that time. And it may be that you literally clock yourself, but you can move yourself to a longer reward cycle that is pleasurable and meaningful, but it means that you have to be intentional. I think that's
you have to work at it. It's like exercise.
Yeah, or like even meditation. Because a lot of times when you start meditation, it doesn't work in the beginning. You have to keep going. I wanted to sort of ask you about the therapeutic part that people said it was like therapy. And I find gardening to be like therapy, and it calms anxiety. Can you talk about the therapeutic side of this? How do people constantly feel that? They feel like, you know, the racing thoughts, the agitation that they typically feel, sometimes the anger can be dissipated by taking on one of these hobbies.
Yeah. And even reducing things like physical pain. You know, there's some physical attributes to this. If someone is experiencing chronic pain, that by activating and paying attention to this kind of activity will take, you can't think about two things at the same time. So by distracting yourself, you can actually sometimes even decrease headaches or other kinds of pain. But for sure, I think there's therapeutic arts and then there's art therapy. Mm-hmm. And I consider these to be therapeutic arts where you're reducing stress, you're encouraging mindfulness, you provide a sense of accomplishments, or you have an opportunity to express yourself. I think there's something really important about creative agency here. And that's something that we don't often exercise. We don't really understand our unconscious by bringing out some of these things that we do through an art form. Then art therapy is more when you're working with a licensed art therapist, could be music, could be dance, could be visual arts, theater, where you're working on a particular problem that you're really trying to solve for. It could be depression. It could be anxiety. Mm. It could be something that could be more serious mental illness or some kind of physical disorder or disability. And those are happening. We're seeing things like knitting showing up in oncology departments during chemotherapy, or spaces being created for stroke patients who are using these kinds of experiences to bring back motor skills. Parkinson's is a great example of that.
Wow.
So this work it's called NeuroArts. It's growing dramatically from creative arts therapies to therapeutic arts. And, you know, therapy isn't going from illness to health. It's thriving and flourishing, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think we need to think about this as something we need to be full human.
Well, that's Susan Magsalman, the founder and executive director of the International Arts and Mind Lab at Johns Hopkins, co-author of the New York Times bestselling book, Your Brain on Art. Susan, thanks for the time today on Studio 2. Fascinating insights.
Pleasure. Thank you.
And let me read in maybe one more comment. This is a listener who said, I don't know if this is considered a granny hobby, but I believe it to be something passed down generation to generation. I have a passion for hunting and fishing that was taught to me by my dad, that was taught to him by his dad, all the way back in the family. It relaxes me to be outdoors. The smallest part of the hunt is the harvest. It's being outside. It's being with family. Yeah. It's learning what generations before you have learned.
I love it. I love it. I love it. And so now it is time, though, because it is Thursday, to reveal our Studio 2 DJ of the Day song selection. Diana, hit it.
I need you.
And that is, I love it. That is Boomin' Granny by the Beastie Boys from the Check Your Head Sessions from 1992.
Boomin' Granny.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with this track?
I am not familiar. I like the beat, though.
Yeah, I want to learn more. Thank you to Rob M. from Lafayette Hill for choosing that song and being our DJ of the day. Definitely an appropriate choice.
Yes, and thank you, of course, to our producers, Debbie Bilder, Hazel May Bryan, and Ben Abrams. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer, Diana Martinez, and Tina Calicay engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
She's booming Cherry.
That's right.
I'm booming Avi. We'll talk to you next week.
Because I saw you at the checkout line. You dropped your coupons and you were looking fine.